The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
This is Always Right Radio on AM 1420, The Answer. Here's your host, Bob France.
Always Right Radio, indeed. 7 minutes after 10 o'clock, and hour number two has commenced. Thank you so much for being with us. It is a Thursday, the 25th morning of the fourth month in the year of our Lord, 2024. If you are normally getting ready for the conversation on the culture wars with Dr. Everett Piper, Dr. Piper has the day off. He's actually in our state. Normally we talk to Dr. Piper from Oklahoma every Thursday at this time. It's our benchmark, but he's in Cincinnati. Giving a speech this morning, so he's got the day off, and so we're going to go into a different direction, and we're going to talk about something different. Although we talk about this topic with Dr. Piper an awful lot as well. There's an event coming up on Tuesday that might be of interest to you if you are a parent or maybe even a grandparent and you are concerned about what your kids are being taught in school with respect to gender and sex identity. Particularly the ongoing social contagion and the pushing of children toward that lifestyle with a lot of very different and dangerous psychological techniques. Young kids with their preformative minds are very vulnerable. So this event is happening on Tuesday in Beechwood at the Cuyahoga County Public Library there. The event is described as an event for parents, educators, and community members who are curious and concerned about schools introducing topics of gender and sexuality to children. Join us for a discussion and a Q&A with Dr. Levine in the auditorium at the Beechwood Public Library. The event is free, but donations are encouraged. You must RSVP for the event as space is limited. And you can do that. We'll give you the specifics on how you can register for that if you would like. Who is this Dr. Levine of which they speak? Dr. Stephen Levine is a clinical professor of psychiatry at Case Western Reserve University School of Medicine. He's an expert in gender dysphoria and in gender identity. He's a distinguished life fellow of the American Psychiatric Association and a professor with many years of experience in the fields of gender and sexuality. He is also a thorn in the side of the LGBTQ communities that continue to try to push little children into these deviant alternative lifestyles. We'll talk about that, too. Dr. Levine, thank you for the time this morning. How are you, sir?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. So let's start with the event on Tuesday, and then we'll get into a little bit more of the specifics on the subject matter. Tell us what the goal of the event that is happening in Beechwood on Tuesday is, Doctor.
Well, I think last year there was somebody who spoke about this to the same group, and she was particularly affirmative and had certain concepts that offended many of the people in the audience. And so this year they were looking for somebody who had a different view, and I hope a more balanced view about this phenomenon. We generally think that there's such diversity in any psychological phenomenon that one size doesn't fit all, one approach doesn't fit every situation. And so I've been involved with transgender human beings for a little over 50 years, and during those five decades, much has changed in this whole phenomenon, including the vocabulary and including the prevalence or the incidence of new, younger people. 50 years ago, when transgender stuff became clinically apparent, it was mostly with adults and mostly with biologic males. Today, it's actually what we call the demography, the the patterns of people who were trans-identified have shifted dramatically. Number one, the numbers of people, young people, have increased enormously. And number two, most of these people, about 70% of them now, are biologic females who, in response to early puberty, are declaring themselves to be boys. So what we learned, what we saw 40, 50 years ago is dramatically different than what we see today. And so in your introduction, I think you mentioned social contagion. Mm-hmm. And so we have been wondering, all of us are parents and professionals, have been wondering, what are the forces that are shaping this new social phenomenon? It's a little shocking, but some data indicate that up to one in five kids who are freshmen in college are identifying with sexual minority status. Most of them are gay or lesbian, but a large percentage of them are also trans-identified. Sometimes they call themselves non-binary, meaning that they're neither simply male or female, but some combination of both. So the phenomenon is changing, and we're all scratching our heads about, number one, what is causing this, and number two, what we should do about it, if anything. And, well, in the past, what was done about this was to give cross-sex hormones and eventually surgery. But now that the children are presenting with this at a much younger age, there's far more caution about providing medical and surgical intervention for an identity in an adolescent. We recognize that among adolescents, there are certain characteristics. They feel intensely about things. They're very changeable. They're given to rigid, brief identifications with movements. So we are trying to help them be a healthy adolescent and help them not limit their future life possibilities. So we're all in this together, trying to understand what is happening and how to prevent tragedy.
Well, tragedy can be found in a number of different ways, obviously, as it pertains to this subject matter. We are talking, if you just tuned in, with Dr. Stephen Levine. He's a clinical professor of psychiatry at Case Western Reserve, and he's an expert on gender dysphoria and gender identity. You mentioned you've been at this for some 50 years. Most people just found out about this phenomenon in the last 5 years, maybe the last 10, maybe a little bit longer than that, depending on who you are and how dialed in you have been. Because, you know, even the word transgender, you mentioned the vocabulary, used to be called transsexual, if I'm not mistaken. When you started this work studying this phenomenon, it was much, much less pervasive, as you pointed out, 50 years ago. How was it referred to then? Was it referred to as what I think I and others continue to call it? Was it referred to as a psychological disorder?
Yes. It certainly was. This thing got started, throughout history, there have been reports of human beings who die and they discover that the sex that the culture thought they were was not correct. But this got, in America, this got started in the late 40s. There was a book, 1966, by a man named Harry Benjamin, called The Transsexual Phenomenon. At that time in 1966, he reported on, something like 150 people he had seen during the course of his life as an endocrinologist. But it was a rare phenomenon, and it continued to be a rare phenomenon until around the mid-90s, 1990s. And particularly once the century turned into this current century, we've had an increasing numbers of people. And you're right, we called those things transsexual. Mm-hmm. People thought that you could change sex, but it became realized that you can't change your sex. No one can change their sex. You can change your gender presentation. And this is one of the things that causes so much alarm and controversy, because teenagers think, you know, when a girl declares that she's a trans boy, she believes she is a boy, and she gets enraged when people tell her she's a girl who's pretending to be a boy, or something like that, where she's not a boy. But she actually believes that she's a boy, and the body is different than her gender, but gender is more important than her body. And this is kind of an intellectual challenge for parents and others who deal with them.
Dr. Levine, let me ask you a question about this, if I may, about gender, because, you know, we continue to use that word. And, you know, the pro-trans community, if you will, over the course of these last several years have continued to say sex is not the same as gender. Sex is not the same as gender. We had always, most of us laypersons, have always used them interchangeably. But now that they're trying to draw a distinction between them, isn't it fair to say that sex is what you biologically are, but gender is nothing more than your personality? You, in other words, a female, an anatomical, biological, chromosomal female can be masculine, can have masculine traits. It's their personality. And a male, you know, a biological male can have more feminine traits. It does not change their sex to have those traits. Their gender is really essentially just kind of how they carry themselves and what their interests are and what their feelings are. It's more of a personality thing, is it not?
Well, yes, sex is of the body, and it's of every cell in the body. And it's immutable, it's unchangeable. And gender is this personal sense of the self. That's an evolving phenomenon for all people, not just trans people. My masculinity or my femininity and my understanding of myself in terms of maleness or femaleness always evolves. It evolves throughout the life cycle. So trans human beings, trans-identified people, males or females, are human beings, and all human beings' aspects of identity evolve over time. It's not an immutable, unchangeable phenomenon.
Help me understand that, Dr. Levine. I apologize. Help me understand that part when you say our identities evolve over time. I mean, I've been a male my entire life. I'll be a male until the moment I die, as you pointed out. But identification is evolving. Are you suggesting that is it normal? Pardon the use of that word. I know it's not a clinical term, but is it normal for a person like me to, as I age over time, start to change my identification into a different gender?
No, but your understanding of, say, if you're a biologic male and you have felt an identification with maleness and you have your own variety of masculinity, and your understanding of male roles and what males are supposed to be and how you are in relationship to that cultural idea is evolving. So your concepts of how to be a man at 17 is going to be very different than your concepts of how to be a man at 47.
Got it. That makes a lot more sense. That made it a lot more clear. And going back to the personality part of this, Dr. Levine, you brought up non-binary. And did that two questions. Did that exist when you started studying this as carefully as you did 50 years ago?
It seems to be
a new trend. Okay, go ahead and take that one first, then I'll follow up.
Yeah, so non-binary makes reference to binary. And our concept of transsexual in the 60s, the 70s, 80s, and the 90s were that if one were a male and wanted to be a woman, wanted to live as a woman, we called that they belonged from one team or another. They were either the male team or the female team. They were binary, either or. Binary means either or, you know, like one versus zero. It's either one or one or zero. That's binary. But modern kids have evolved the concept of gender. So some of them say they don't have a gender. Some of them say they're both. Some of them say it's fluid, it's changing, because in reference to what we just talked about, the evolution of identity. So today I think I'm this, and tomorrow I think I'm that. Many trans kids at 14 have a preferred name by 14 and a half. They have a different name by 15. They have a third name. So you can see there's an evolution as people mature and become more aware of themselves and more aware of the culture. There's an evolution. So many of these kids are wisely calling themselves non-binary. They're not simply the opposite gender. They are exploring how to be in a way that maximizes their function and their comfort and their mental health. That's what they're at. They're looking to find a way of being me that is much more comfortable than I used to be when I was living according to my biologic sex.
Yeah, and that's that I think is at the core of this entire thing, this contagion that we're talking about, this massive growth in the trans community, if you will. We're talking to Dr. Stephen Levine, clinical professor of psychiatry at Case Western Reserve University, because when we hear about what we now know, or what we now call gender dysphoria, it impacts such a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage of the population, as we have ever understood it, where somebody really, really has a mental condition where their mental makeup does not comport with their physiological and chromosomal and biological body. In the same way that a person in their mental makeup can actually split into two personnel, and not in the same way, don't get me wrong. And I don't mean to lecture a professor of your esteem in this field. This is just as a layman describing this. When we hear about the actual gender dysphoria, it afflicts very, very few people where they feel like they are one sex, but their body tells them they're another. But because of the existence and the new creation that you just described of non-binary, does that not undermine the entire concept that they're saying of trapped in the wrong body? It's, no, I want to be flexible. I want to switch from one to the other and back again. One of 75 different genders that are listed on the spectrum now that they have come up with. Again, doesn't that just undermine the efforts that they want or that they have been making for so many years to convince us that people can just be born in the wrong body when they are creating so many different new avenues to travel down, I feel like, for attention and for popularity?
Well, born in the wrong body as a phrase used to be very popular. Mm. Actually, I don't hear that as much any longer. I think the field of transgender, the community of transgender people have become much more sophisticated about understanding their quest. And I don't think that phrase, born in the wrong body, has the power and the utility for explaining the self to the self as it used to be used 25 years ago. I don't think anyone's born in the wrong body, actually, and they're born in a body. And that body will remain as long as that person is alive in that sex. What they're now communicating is that my concept of how to be a man, if I'm a male, if I have a male body, my concept, I'm repudiating my how I understand males to be. I sense my nature to be different than the classic stereotypic concepts of how to be a male. Now, you know, intellectually, we know that there's no one way to be a male. If we took 100 men, put them in together and investigated them, we would see that their maleness had, you know, all kinds of, maybe 100 varieties of how to be a man. But when you're 12 years old and 13 years old and you see certain aspects in the culture of how to be a man, and you don't identify with that, it causes you turmoil. I can just tell you on a personal and very benign way, when I went to college, everyone in my freshman year of college, after studying, it seemed to be that everyone wanted to go to the bar and have a beer. And so, like other boys, I went to the bar and had a beer, but I didn't like beer. And because I didn't like beer, I could never even finish one draft beer. And I worried for 6-7 months about, what's wrong with me? What kind of guy am I? What kind of boy am I? Am I unmasculine because I didn't like beer? You see? Now, that was my personal experience. I finally grew that idea, and I accepted whatever my pattern I had as a person. So you see, I think we're all struggling with how to be a man, how to be a woman. And we recognize, although young people do not recognize as much as older people do, that there are innumerable ways of expressing your maleness or your femaleness. And it doesn't require you to repudiate your body per se, but to be the kind of person you are temperamentally and follow your interests and integrate your interests with your body without doing mayhem to your body, without cutting off your breasts, without taking testosterone, without taking estrogen and so forth. In other words, we have to grow up and integrate the masculine and female identifications and interest patterns that all of us have. So you and I, not being transgender, have managed to integrate the male identifications with our female identifications and keeping it within our maleness. And trans people can't do that yet.
Well, that's a great explanation, Dr. Levine. And we're a little short on time here, so I'll have to wrap it with this question. But again, I'm going back toward, you know, personality traits as opposed to actual identification of cross identification as a male to female. How do we explain then the existence of all of these other things like the furries? Those who say, and I'm not just talking about the ones doing performative art where they're wearing costumes to be clowns. I'm talking about the ones who literally say, no, I was born in a human body, but I have the soul and the spirit of a different species, whether it be canine or whether it be aviary or whatever the case might be. That's what they're doing. So when I hear all of those things, I feel like this is more than just, again, my male and female, what is masculinity versus what is femininity and how does that define me? I feel like this is all just, like I said, people saying, I'm going to be different for the sake of being different. They don't suffer from any psychological delusions. They suffer from the social pressures of becoming something that will get them more attention.
Well, I think all of us want to be unique, and yet we all want to fit into the cultural norms. This whole idea of furries is a fascinating thing, but it has to do with what you're talking about, identity, or what you like to separate identity from personality, but identity is obviously one aspect of personality. The other aspect of personality I think you're referring to are human traits, human interests, fascinations. So if one is fascinated by a bear, and one comes to love the concept of the freedom and the aggressiveness of being a bear, one can say, well, I want freedom, and I want, and I'm a vegetarian, and I'm aggressive, and so I currently call myself a furry. But you see, these are adolescent things that adolescents try on different ways of being. They're like costumes that are tried on or worn for 2 months or 2 years, and they're discarded for a new costume. That's a characteristic of adolescence. They're trying on ways of being a person, and they're seeing which ones are successful, that is, keep them calm, and which ones make them more anxious.
Yeah, you just hit the nail on the head as far as what I was trying to say. It is. It's costume. They're wearing costumes, and they're trying to say that means they're actually not what they biologically are. Dr. Levine, I'm out of time, unfortunately. I wish we had more time together because I could go on and on and on and listen and get so much more insight for this. But I will tell people they can learn from you on Tuesday night on the 30th. The Parents for Accountability in Cleveland Independent Schools is hosting this conversation with Dr. Levine on gender and sex identity in schools at the Beechwood Public Library. You do have to RSVP, and it looks like the website for that is PFACLE, PFA for Parents for Accountability, CLE for Cleveland, PFACLE.com. Go to the event page there and find the event with Dr. Stephen Levine if you would like to be there and learn on Tuesday. Doctor, thank you for the time. I wish we had more, but I appreciate your efforts here very much, and have a great day, sir.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. It's 10:30. We'll take a time out here.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.